Welcome to Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, where we explore how studies here are changing our world today and in the future. I'm Robin Montague, your host and a writer here at the University. As humans, our ability to feel fear has kept us safe. But what happens when the real threat to our future is our own making?
If we look at things on the climate change, climate emergency, architecture can be a negative contributor into these things. We need to be very conscious about what we are creating.
With World Earth Day fast approaching, this episode will explore the transformative power of design, delve into utopian visions, and the impact of architecture on building a safe and sustainable future. Climate change is the biggest threat to life as we know it. The best science we have tells us we must globally achieve net zero carbon emissions no later than 2050. But in order to do this, we need to work together and quite literally lay good foundations. Architecture has a large environmental impact. Buildings account for as much as a third of energy consumption worldwide. And if left unchecked, that's set to double by 2050.
One can argue that architecture has been a whole history of looking for a shelter from the storm, or that I'm afraid of something, so I'm building something to feel safe. So it becomes a key element of our survival. Whether it can actually protect us or up to a point it creates more problems, that's something that has been a lot in discussion.
That's Dr. Phivos Kalitis, the Associate Head of the Portsmouth School of Architecture at the University. He believes architects have a responsibility to be socially conscious and considerate of the natural world, something which hasn't always been prioritised in the profession.
You exist within architecture. You exist within a world that there is a built environment, there is a natural environment, and people have a tendency of seeing that their world is the built environment and they just escape into nature. But I think it goes back again to this element of survival. I always refer to a text by Nan Ehlin, who is a sociologist, and she has written this text called Form Follows Fear. She looks into the history of architecture and design, and she looks like from, okay, we went to the caves to feel safe from the storm. We created like walled cities because we wanted to avoid external enemies. And you progress, then you have like, and we ended up having, I don't know, gated communities or these super safe houses that they're going to protect us, or underground shelters to save us from a nuclear attack. So she goes through that narrative, and then it's kind of interesting how today we realize that, oh, in order to survive, we need to work with nature. So suddenly nature is not something against what we're working on. Henri Lefebvre, in his book, The Right to the City, he mentions like this clash between the urban world and nature, and the narrative since the 60s has changed to a level that we want to invite nature. We started talking about dirty architecture instead of sanitized buildings, that you allow dirt, soil to become part of your everyday world. You don't just try to pave everything in order for feeling clean.
Over the past century, there has been a radical shift in architecture. It began in the 1920s with Bauhaus, a German artistic movement. It replaced the traditional pupil-teacher relationship with the idea of a community of artists working together. Bauhaus followers believed design was not just about creating beautiful objects. Instead, it was about reflecting the social, cultural, and political context of the time. This helped to inspire the modernism era, where form follows function. Dr. Antonino Di Remo is a reader in architecture at the University of Portsmouth.
The modernist city would work like a clock, like a machine. At 12 you eat, here is the space in the city where you are producing, so industry, here is the space where you have education, and here you live, houses. So the city divided in many parts, and each of them quite distinct. Today is not longer like that. Today we work towards a paradigm of mixing activities, so a building needs to perform several things together, and that is something very useful also to trigger creative economy in the city and so on. But the interesting thing is regarding to the form that in the maybe in the 80s, 90s, another slogan that I read was form follows energy, because the form of the building needs to work in tandem with the environmental factors. So if the form is the first thing, imagine a building which is really spread, that building will release all the heating, will be very difficult to be efficiently thermo-insulated, and so on and so forth. Today, another slogan is forms follow life, in the sense that we should think about building like really living entities. There is this significant trend in reassociating the world of the nature and the world of architecture, which has been considered historically handmade. You know, architecture is artificial, is handmade, doesn't have anything to do with living things, so with vegetation, animals, even with the human body as it is. And there is a part of contemporary research which is working towards this idea that maybe there is a deeper link between the way we think about the materials, the way we think about the morphology of the building, in other words, the architectural form. And that is an ecological way to think about the future of architecture. So in a way, you are using the word integral. I personally see that integral level risking engagement with the natural world, and I think that could be also a good direction in terms of climate change, like desertification, flooding.
While the concept of architecture playing a significant role in the fight against climate change sounds like something everyone would be on board with, Antonino says that's not always the case.
If I look at architecture today, or at least at the debate, I found that there are many good things happening, but also many things that are concerning, because I believe that in theoretical debate, but also in the practice, there is a significant effort in making the discipline working in a more inclusive way, so with a strong focus on social aspects. On the other hand, there is also a very regressive, in my view, this is my personal view, of people who are trying to claim the autonomy of the discipline. You know, the more you work to include, the more you work to embrace, to be open, the higher the discipline can be blurred, branched. And so architects that are much more traditional, let's say, or conservative, they would say, no, you don't need to be concerned. Architecture cannot solve social problems or cannot solve the pollution. So I think it will be more and more interesting to see how architects will be positioning themselves.
As we mentioned earlier, the Bauhaus movement encouraged artists and designers from all backgrounds to work together to produce something functional but with flair. Vivos and Antonino believe that collaborative approach will be critical if architecture is going to have a positive impact on our planet. But it's not just the creatives that need to put their heads together.
You see more and more work that opens up to different disciplines. And it's not that these were not happening 40 years ago, but still what was driving was the idea of the architect as a great designer who's going to create something beautiful and pleasing. You see headlines now that it's not about, oh, this thing won this competition because it looks beautiful and weird. It starts becoming, oh, because it's carbon positive and not carbon negative. So you can see a completely different approach of what people appreciate, a much more gentle way of working with nature.
And then another very important shift, I think, is the relation with technologies. There has been a big, significant amount of availability of technologies in architecture, at least since the 60s, 70s, with the 80s more and more. In this country, that relation historically has been absolutely strong. In the UK, for instance, we have some first examples of a cybernetic scientist working with architects at the Architectural Association. That would happen also only in the US. And now all of that things evolved in the possible application of AI.
Hello, I'm Professor George Burrows from the University of Portsmouth's Faculty of Creative and Cultural Industries. This episode of Life Solved has showcased some of our varied and vital work, which spans everything from shaping the smart cities of tomorrow through to exploring how the arts, media and journalism inform our daily lives. We're also fueling technological advances, from animation to visual computing. If this podcast has you feeling inspired, you can find out how to support our research, collaborate or study with us at port.ac.uk.
So you've heard, for architecture to succeed in its goal to help save the world, people need to work together and ultimately have a collective vision of what our future will look like. But often in pop culture, that image involves great cities packed with machines and artificial environments with very little sign of nature. Think Blade Runner or Star Wars. So, do we need to reimagine what progress looks like?
It's kind of interesting how in these futures, you usually don't see nature being there because it's about the visual impact. So everybody's so focused, I think, on let's make this very visually strong future, and they forgot the trees, or you know that nature is something like for a completely different scene, is not when someone is approaching, you know, the Star Wars city, which again goes back to a lot of theories about that fight between nature and the city. So it has to do with the way that we have been seeing the world of constantly developing. So if there is a continuous development, a continuous growth, that means that our cities will grow continuously, but the planet has a specific surface. So are we going to end up kicking out nature because that city has to grow a lot? And what happens when you have covered the planet with a city?
I don't know what the future will bring. I think even the idea of development that we have, we think that development are ever-expanding things. That's not development. So this idea of expansion, it's rather development could be a creative way to keep a good economy working, to keep a society evolving, while designing and implementing creative transactions. I am against those saying, oh, we need to stop development and go back. No, we progress, but maybe it's the idea of the progress that needs to be revisited. I mean, progress doesn't necessarily mean let's grow.
Sometimes progress can also mean going back to basics.
In 2008, at the Venice Biennale of Architecture, Frank Gehry, who is the architect who did the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, who is, if you see his architecture, is a super steel structure, weird shapes. And for the Biennale there, he recreated a part of these very complicated surfaces with mud and timber. And it was a bit of an experiment, saying if you test the materials, if you engage with what is available, you can do these weird shapes. It may take more time, but in a way, it may save you a lot of energy. I'm always thinking that there was this project in Africa, there was a women's center, and one of the things that the architects did at the moment is that they discussed with the local women, and they adapted the technology from the size of the bricks to be something that can fit better to the average woman's hand, because the bricks are designed based on a man's hand, which means that you exclude people from being able to participate. So within that, you can see that, yeah, that's a technical solution. That's technology. It doesn't always have to be a high-tech thing with a touch screen, because we are happy that that's the only way of moving things forward, is to have another button or a touch screen.
Putting the well-being of the planet and people ahead of profit when it comes to construction sounds great, But Fivo says it's not always feasible.
I remember I was reading a text in the past by Aureli, who is a third edition like of architecture, and he was saying that architecture wants to be socially responsible, but at the same time is always linked to power, because that's where the money comes from, and that in a way, if you have the right tools, you should be able to design what your client wants, but at the same time you need to be inventful enough so that that building continues to be relevant. That is the big challenge of how you can find the right arguments through your designs that you will allow the development to happen, because people need homes, people need spaces to work, they need to be to feel safe. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that this has to happen in a way that's going to be destructive for the planet. So, yeah, I think hopefully, like the way that teaching has changed, at least in the school, we insist a lot on these elements of social responsibility, about our students being aware of the impact that their building will have on the world.
As we've heard, architecture has the power to be a significant tool in our pursuit to build a better world. In an ideal scenario, the profession would be able to prioritise climate change above cost, clients and regulation. But despite these hurdles, progress is being made. 2019 saw the launch of Architects Declare, a network of people working in industry who are committed to addressing the climate and biodiversity emergency. There are now over 5,000 companies in 22 different countries signed up who work with governments, clients and the press to reduce architecture's carbon footprint. The future is what we make it. Thanks for listening to this episode of Life Solved. You're very welcome to be part of the discussion. Email us at lifesolved@port.ac.uk. That's lifesolved, one word, at port.ac.uk. Tell us what you think and make suggestions for future episodes of Life Solved. And we'd love it if you clicked follow on your podcast app now so you never miss an edition. We'd really appreciate it if you left a rating or review as well. It helps us get these conversations into more ears around the globe. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to support our work, including the research that you've heard here, then head to port.ac.uk/lifesolved to find out how. You can also find out how to work or study with us. Bye for now.